good afternoon, everybody. Is the volume right? Everything working out fine, smooth, and nobody's going deaf and nobody's having to sort of like really turn up the volume on their radio. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Allison, Elizabeth, and Bettina, and we are Movement Museum. It's 2:04 in the afternoon. We talk about dance on your radio, on your computer, on your mobile device, all over the place. That was Sandy Nelson doing his version of Do You Want to Dance? And then we have to say 90.3 FM on your radio dial, 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer, and all over the place elsewhere. And then I actually have a surprise for you guys today.
What's that?
I'm not actually going to recite the poem.
Oh.
Oh. So what are we going to do?
We have somebody else who's going to recite the poem.
Something you prepared earlier?
Just a little bit, yes. But yeah, I've been going through my Frank O'Hara fix. We have a Frank O'Hara fix because I am going through my Frank O'Hara phase. And this is another poem of his from Love Songs. And this is called, Having a Coke With You. Listen in.
The poem's called Having a Coke With You. It's even more fun than going to St. Sebastian, Irun, Ondai, Biarritz, Bayonne, or being sick to my stomach on the Travessera de Gracia in Barcelona. Partly because in your orange shirt you look like a better, happier St. Sebastian. Partly because of my love for you, partly because of your love for yogurt, partly because of the fluorescent orange tulips around the birches, partly because of the secrecy our smiles take on before people in statuary. It is hard to believe when I'm with you that there can be anything as still, as solemn, as unpleasantly definitive as statuary, when right in front of it, in the warm New York 4 o'clock light. We are drifting back and forth between each other like a tree breathing through its spectacles. And the portrait show seems to have no faces in it at all, just paint. You suddenly wonder why in the world anyone ever did them. I look at you, and I would rather look at you than all the portraits in the world except possibly for the Polish rider occasionally. And anyway, it's in the Frick, which thank heavens you haven't gone to yet so we can go together the first time. And the fact that you move so beautifully more or less takes care of futurism, just as at home I never think of the nude descending a staircase or at a rehearsal a single drawing of Leonardo or Michelangelo that used to wow me. And what good does all the research of the Impressionists do them when they never got the right person to stand near the tree when the sun sank? Or for that matter, Marino Marini when he didn't pick the rider as carefully as the horse. It seems they were all cheated of some marvelous experience, which is not going to go wasted on me, which is why I'm telling you about it.
And so I'm not certain if I would have read that the same way, but I do get a kick out of him reading it and hearing how he would have read it. Or how, not how he would have read it, how he read it.
Yeah, it was a really good version.
Mm-hmm. It's a very good poem.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, there's somebody out there who's getting very, very embarrassed. But yeah, I'm working on getting a copy of the collected poems, and then we're just going to go through them one after the other until everybody, including myself, gets sick and tired of Frank O'Hara.
That's going to be a good long while.
So today we have our All Review Show version 2. Yeah, there's that. It's one of these weird...
Oh, it's not my headset that's peeping. Oh, thank God. I didn't dare say anything.
It's Drainolith doing Organ Zone. And
okay. Also, your radio's not faulty.
No. You're
okay. Oh, yeah. I'm getting into it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right.
Well, we'll keep it quiet so that it doesn't really interfere. So, yeah, because we've seen an awful lot of shows recently. I've seen... we had La Zampa in, and then you guys...
I saw La Zampa.
You saw that.
As part of the Edgy Woman Festival.
Uh-huh, and then there was N.O. with, I can't pronounce her name to begin with, and then if it was...
Yukimo Yoshioka.
Mm-hmm, which was also part of the Edgy Woman. We have then Grupo Corpo, and then the Jiri Carillion.
Yes, that was great. Uh-huh,
so who wants to go first?
Did we all see the Jiri Carillion?
No.
Killian?
No.
Who didn't?
Yeah, there's no R in there. I think it's Killian.
Killian.
Mm-hmm. I was the one who got shafted.
Oh, poor you.
It really is a shame. It was an amazing show.
And then hold on one second. We'll cut out this thing, the Drainolith here for a second, and let's do this.
Oh.
Yes, yes. That's the music that gets played at one of the pieces of the Jiri Killian. Sure there's no R?
Yeah, and yep. There's an R in the Jiri.
Okay.
But not in the Killian.
And so, what did I miss?
Well, you missed something
awful. The best
awful.
Show this year so far.
Yeah. This is going to be the show I'm going to compare all the other shows to that absolutely. Are going to come up in the next few years.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be, this wasn't as good as the Jiri Killian.
I even found, I feel bad for Grupo Corpo because I saw them the week after and it was like, it was a great show, but I was just, the bar's been raised.
Well, you know, he comes with a fantastic reputation of being one of the greatest choreographers of, you know, all time and certainly a contemporary choreographer and absolutely correct. You know, it's occasionally you can believe the blurb.
Mm-hmm.
What I really liked in his pieces was how he plays with contrasts. He will play with synchronicity, but then he has a couple of people always sort of dropping out of formation and doing their own thing. So mm-hmm. you have synchronicity versus individuality.
He really knows how to use canon and unison and mm-hmm. all these little tricks that you're like, oh, you know, that's cheap or whatever, but not at all. The way that he uses those little, take somebody out of the sequence, you know, mm-hmm. have everyone doing the same thing and then one drops and then the next drops, you know, and it just, it's clean and it's beautiful and it's really well thought out.
Yeah, it felt really organic. Nothing felt artificial.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that the dancers were really embodying the music. They were acting out the music. It's like if they stopped dancing, if they stopped moving, the music would stop. All the music in the world would stop if they'd stopped moving. It's that was the impression I got from them. They were so in it.
Do you want to?
Although, if you guys can back up a second, was it one long piece? The 17 short pieces?
It was three pieces. So we had one piece that was called Symphony of the Psalms that has music by Stravinsky. Then we had Bella Figura, which had a variety of classical music, amongst which was Vivaldi and some others. And then at the end we had six dances, and I think that was Mozart, right? At the end?
I think so.
Yeah, I have my... I brought the program, but I forgot.
As much as they're all the same style of neoclassical kind of contemporary dance, but each piece had its own vocabulary to it, which was I really appreciated, you know? Like, it was funny because as I was talking to people after seeing the show and who else had seen the show, everyone had a different favorite. Mm. And they all have such different moods to them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Each one had its own point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the first piece I felt was more about, you know, formation and synchronicity. And the second one was obviously about flamboyant sexuality and the body. And the third piece was just immensely comical,
mm-hmm.
but without being farcical. It was just really surprising, and people were laughing all the time.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think people are used to laughing at ballet.
No.
It's for a nice change.
And it was a great way to end the show, too.
Yeah.
You leave with a big smile on your face.
Mm-hmm.
To set up maybe the image of what was going on in the first piece, you have these chairs lining the back wall and the side of the stage. One side, stage left, anyway. And that was those were the props.
And the beautiful Persian carpet completely covering the back wall. It's lush, very rich.
And this is Théâtre Maisonneuve, and this is a huge, huge backdrop.
I like how normally carpets are on the floor, so already they were playing with the planes, what is up and what is down.
Mm-hmm. For sure, for sure. And dancers, the women in their beautiful kind of neutral colored dresses. Mm-hmm. And what were the men wearing? Do you remember?
I don't remember. Something very harmonious, subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And you really just noticed the dancers.
Yeah, it was themselves. Very, very clean,
mm-hmm.
everything. And they played a lot with lines. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite moments was when they were walking from one side of the stage to the other, all in a big line. I think they were really slowly walking to the beat of the music. And then as you were talking about falling out, people would fall out and start
like
a sequence.
Yeah.
You would have little duets starting. And... sorry. And
see, I told you it wasn't part of the music.
I switched it off. Seriously.
That's okay.
It was gorgeous. And like you were saying, very organic. It just felt right. And it was so effective.
Yeah. What I also liked is that occasionally you would have pairs dancing or a group of four or six dancing, and then slowly they would sort of, the evolution of the gestures would evolve away from synchronicity, and they would each sort of do their own thing, and your eye was always wandering around. You could always shift your focus from, you know, this group of dancers to that group of dancers.
On that note, one of the things I find really frustrating in large group pieces is when your focus is so split and you don't know where to look. Mm. But with lights and with just the detail and the choreography, your eye was directed. Yeah. Like, you were told where to look and where the focus was, without being like, here's a solo, here's a duet, you know, switch, switch, switch. I think everyone stayed on stage the entire time for that first piece there.
Yes.
And it was, you just knew where to look and nothing was overwhelming. Everything was just perfect.
So what did you think about the second piece? Because I had some mixed reviews from friends.
Same, yeah.
So some people thought it was really distracting to have the topless women. Others thought it was really cool.
All the performers, male and female, had nothing on top, and then these giant red skirts that go all the way to the floor. And it was lots of hip movement and shaking around and really making those skirts move. I had some people who that was their favorite piece, absolutely. And it wouldn't have been the same if they had, you know, tops on, because it was all about the body and creating this image, this beautiful image, and they found that it was treated really, like, respectfully and really well done, and that it worked.
Yeah, but there is that, of course, that accent of eroticism in there when you take the top off a woman, and it is undeniable. So I was sitting there and trying to explain it away, you know, because it's artistic and you know, it is a part of the piece. It's coherent. But then I thought, well, but maybe it is supposed to be sexy. Maybe that's all that is, you know? Can we maybe acknowledge that, considering also there were the mannequins, sort of plastic two naked plastic mannequins suspended in sort of these Perspex boxes.
Yeah.
So it was all about nudity.
What I found that interesting, because those were on... they were part of the set from the get-go, and I thought they led us into nudity really nicely. So first you see, you know, the naked, you know, fake body, and then we had a couple people come out and do something very simple in you know, just nude colored bottoms. And so you're like, okay, you know, you get used to looking at the breasts, and then slowly we move into kind of the bulk of the piece, Bella Figura, and you're already accustomed to that.
Yeah. So it wasn't meant for shock value.
No,
it was really part of the piece.
Yeah.
And I also like the use of the curtains, because you'd have the stage curtains occasionally sort of move in, and then the space for the performers got smaller and smaller and smaller.
They'd move in from the side and from the top, and
And there were also people behind the curtain that suddenly rushed out and grabbed one of the dancers, and it looked like the curtain itself was capturing her, and she was struggling to get out, you know. So the use of curtains of revealing and hiding and restricting and opening up was very nice parallel with the body itself.
There's this beautiful image too, when the top black curtain comes down for the first time and the dancers are standing there with their arms out in front of them, and it just falls onto their arms and it keeps spilling and spilling, so it's spilling over their arms, and then snap, you know, half the dancers flip in front of the curtain, half the dancers flip behind.
Yeah.
And it was just like, really good use of the elements that he decided to put into use there. Everything was, you know, I think used to the fullest potential.
Yeah, but it didn't feel labored. It always felt innovative, and there was always like yet another way he could use the curtains or a piece of costume or an idea. And he would move the idea around, but I never felt like, okay, he's trying, you know, 56 ways of doing something with a curtain.
Right.
You know?
It's like the top five.
Yeah.
What works,
yes,
that's going to go in. Forget about the rest of the, I don't know, experiment.
And the third piece?
The third piece was called Six Dances with the Mozart music. And that was really hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, how would we describe this? They were dancers on cages, on skates.
And they were clowning about. Yeah. But like still, you know, these impressive jumps and lifts and partnering and like great stuff. But their faces were so animated and they were so excited. And props again, mm-hmm. It was so well done. He had these giant like plastic dresses on wheels. Does that sound about right? And so he had people, you know, like
guys.
Wheel on stage.
Yes, with, guys yeah. in these dresses.
Yeah. They're holding them in front of them so that it looks like they're wearing this dress. It was phenomenal. And they had a really tall one at one point. They had somebody on the bottom doing the legs and then someone on top.
That was so funny.
It was cute, yeah.
And you know, everybody laughed. You just got it. It was very easy to like.
And I believe it was very Mozart inspired. You know, he had the dusty wiggy hair, which they played with too. You know, how they're moving around and shaking, the dust flies everywhere. Yeah.
And so does he design his sets as well, or did somebody else design the sets?
Hang on, I have the programmer handy? With me. He does everything. He does the costumes as well. Hang on, not all of them. No, so decor set design is him, but there's Joke Wissner who's doing the costumes.
Okay, because it sounds as from the way that you guys are describing it, spend an awful lot of time talking about what was happening on stage and how it was happening, but not an awful lot on the movement. The movement is...
Well, we did talk about the movement.
We can talk more about the movement. I'm into
yes,
that.
Please.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's the epitome of everything good in dance. It's because you've got the strong lines and the strong positions. You've got the high legs. You've got all that beautiful stuff that you want to see in ballet. And then you have these really nice moments of like contact and that goes beyond what partnering in ballet would be. You know, you have a head resting on a chest. You have like lifts that are a little bit closer, a little bit more secure. There's some incredible lifts happening where, you know, a man would lift the woman up like high, high over the head while she's jumping and then move across the stage. There was so much movement, so much running around, like they just covered so much space. And there was the last duet of the first section. It was almost like a figure skating piece. Mm-hmm. He was like flinging her around in a circle so that her feet weren't even touching the ground. And she was creating these beautiful positions. And it was just astonishing. I think I gasped. The person I was with was like, wow, you liked that. I was like, oh my God.
And yeah. So would he be responsible for just coming up with new moves or just pushing the envelope further and further away?
Oh, definitely his own vocabulary mm-hmm. in there. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Totally innovative. You never knew what was coming up next.
Yeah. Okay, so next time I shift you guys, I get the tickets.
Yeah. Actually, it wasn't that good. You wouldn't like it.
Right? Yeah, really? Right.
You wouldn't like it.
I changed my mind.
Okay, anything else, or should we go on?
I think I'm good.
Yeah.
Okay. Next. How do you pronounce her name again?
Yumiko Yoshioka. And she is a buto dancer.
Yeah.
Part of the Edgy Women Festival, which I got to see one performance of at Tangente on the... 25th, it was running 25th, 26th of March. And she was the top of the bill. There were two other dancers, Lise Vigneault and Karen Sherman. But really, Yumiko's piece was, I guess, what gave the title to this evening's show and also, you know, what brought people into the room. I want to say just a small mention about the Edgy Women Festival. Well, at least that evening. I can't say that I found it specifically edgy. It was certainly women. Mm-hmm. But considering, you know, the kind of problems women have to deal with, and if you're going to, you know, bother having a women's festival and then call it Edgy Women and only invite women to do stuff, I would expect a little bit of edginess.
Okay, it's sort of like my dad's reason for not becoming gay.
I don't know what your dad's reason
as
would
be. Sort of just, I'll make it real short, but it's, yeah, back when I was in high school, my best friend came out of the closet, wanted to invite me to come visit him. My dad said, no, you can't visit him at all. He's going to recruit you. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, long discussion with my dad, which I'll cut down into, dad, what's wrong with being gay? He said, women are rounder. Women are softer, and that's the only reason why he could come by. And yeah, so it was sort of my dad's reason for not being gay. It was round woman, roundy, or as, let me spit this out, as opposed to edgy, it was a softer woman festival.
No, I think they just stopped shy of their mandate.
Okay.
You know, when I think of women's issues, you know, there's, I don't know, abortion and equal pay and you know, body image and all these kind of things. That's not what the dancers chose. So we had the Buto piece, which was sort of a general a chrysalis, and then the first being coming to life, and on apparently is Greek for, you know, life and the first ever creature that lived. So, you know, I guess not very women-oriented. The second piece was about social awkwardness, which strikes men and women alike. I mean, it was charming, but, you know, not very edgy. And the third piece was, I'm not sure what it was about. It was either about being a fag hag or about general problems with media and, you know, reality TV. So, you know, I'm not saying it wasn't enjoyable. It was a nice evening, but that was my problem with it. It was nice. I was expecting something really edgy. So,
okay,
so,
and by edgy, thinking sort of pushing yeah, limits and sort of making people sit up and think and maybe say, I'm not comfortable with this.
Be controversial, try out a new way of moving, of dancing, of putting a show together.
Although there, what little, like I know precious little about Buto, it's sort of thing, my understanding of it is that just by doing Buto, you are being edgy and rebellious.
I think you can't just say I'm Buto and therefore I am edgy. You know, be edgy first and then we'll see if it's Buto.
Okay.
That's what I would say. Anyway, so and you know, after you know, belly aching about this, I must say though that the Yumiko's piece was I really enjoyed it. She started off lying naked on the stage wrapped in cling film and spider webs like a real chrysalis. And she lay there while everybody got in and sat down. So since we started 15 minutes late, that woman lay there like a larvae on the stage for about 20 minutes, half an hour. And then she started sort of moving slowly, tearing at the chrysalis. And it was a really obvious narrative, but it was nicely done. And her movements also evolved from very jerky movements, like, you know, something just coming to life and realizing that you can move, to a very animalistic, dog-like, on all fours, monkey moves, to something more fluid, maybe human-like at the end. So it was a very accessible piece, nicely done. I could see some Buto in there, you know, sort of the grimacing and the cross-eyed and the awkward, jerky movements that I've seen before from Buto. And it fit with the piece. And I like the visual of the cling film. And it was, otherwise, there was nothing on the stage. Oh, no, that's not true. She had some sort of puddle of fabric in one corner, in the far corner, that she put on like a robe in the end that was made out of, I don't know, paper, shreds of fabric, like this big cloudy robe kind of thing. And so, yeah, I mean, not super edgy, but, you know, enjoyable, and I think the best piece of the show.
Okay, no, I did an interview with her back last month, I think, and I'm aiming to try and get it aired, or which one's suitable for airing, either next week or the week after, although don't hold your breath for it, because it may take a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, so the second piece was by Lise Vigneault, and it was called Keep It To Yourself, Dear. That didn't really include much dancing, except for the end. So the storyline there was, there's this girl, Jenny, who's really socially awkward. And then the Lise played both Jenny and some sort of scientist in the lab coat with a fake British accent, giving a slide presentation about social awkwardness, and apparently it's some sort of chemical imbalance in the brain. And then you had this hokey 1960s music playing in the background. It was all very jokey. The thing with Lise is that she's extremely charming and everybody just loved her because she's Lise. But the piece felt a little unfinished. And I'm not sure if she put a lot of, like 100% of her heart into it, because some of the slides were misspelled. I think if you're going to, you know, give it your all, you run your slides through a spell check. Maybe that's just me. And so in the end, apparently, so Jenny gets over her awkwardness through dance. And then at the very end, there is Jenny, and they're playing this, you know, and she sort of does these little jerky dance movements, and then she dances more and more, and then she sort of comes out of her shell, and she just goes crazy dancing. Again, a very accessible narrative. The thing at the end was, of course, Lise is a dancer, so for her to play somebody who can't dance is a bit of a challenge. So it didn't really work in the end. 100%. But, you know, we got the point. And it was cute. It wasn't meant to be edgy. I think it was meant to be cute, and it was cute.
Okay, so we will have to talk to them about renaming the festival next year.
Yeah, the Cute Women's Festival. And the last piece, Demolition Boy by Karen Sherman, was, you know, sort of multimedia, saucy. She talked about, in the beginning, it seemed to be about her having a boyfriend who's gay, and how he's all about style and what he's wearing, and he's defining himself by, you know, the kind of jeans he wears. And there was a couple of fun and interesting moments. My favorite piece was when she had the Tyra Banks show playing in the background, but the audio was cut, and instead it was audio of one of her crits from art school. And it was a really weird tension that created, because it took you a moment to, I mean, obviously it was a unrelated voiceover, but for you to, you know, to make that connection between the artificiality of the Tyra Banks show and then the possible artificiality of your professors critting your work. So I think that really resonated with the audience, which I think mostly was artists.
Okay, and then as far as the audience, was it skewed young, skewed old? Because I always have this impression of Edgy Women Festival, skewed young and skewed Y chromosome challenged.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. You got it. But it was a full house. I mean, really packed audience. So, you know, obviously there is an audience for this.
Okay.
So, yeah, but it was, you know, a pleasant evening, what can I say?
I saw something in the Edgy Women Festival too, and I'm wondering, was it all dance, or was it more like performance?
Well, so the Buto piece was entirely dance.
Right.
The other two pieces was mostly theater with 1 or 2 minutes of dance thrown in, just so they could show up at Tangente. How about yours? Because you saw some edgy women too. Were they edgy or were they round?
I would say edgy. Yeah, right. Yeah. I saw the show that Zampa was in with, actually it was, well, we can get into that later, or?
Yeah, we guess. Okay. Let me play some ads here and stuff. Okay, we will be back TBA. Momentarily. It is 2:32. You're listening to Movement Museum on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer. And we're back. Yeah. I got to catch my breath. Yes. Trying to get focused. This is, yes, the Parabellum music in the background.
Oh. Uh-huh. You know what that means?
I like it.
How about you go first, Alex?
Sure thing.
Because there it's, yeah, you go first.
All right. So, Grupo Corvo, who performed at Place César, two pieces, Parabello and Brio.
I think it's Brio, yes.
Brio. Mm-hmm. There we go. It's spelled B-R-E-U, but I have a cheat sheet. Yeah, Brio. Which I believe means darkness or tar or pitch black, depending on where you're getting your source.
That was one of the things that I actually took a note on, if I can interject here slightly, is in the hour, because there it's in the press kit, they gave like gobs and gobs of stuff. And in the hour, Philip Spohr says it's Portuguese for pitch, as in pitch black. And then La Presse, where Sylvie Saint-Jacques wrote, le mot breu veut dire absence de lumière en anglais. Yeah, dot, dot, dot. In Le Devoir, Frédéric Doyon said, breu qui signifie noirceur. Voir and Iris Gagnon Paradis wrote, breu qui signifie littéralement goudron en portugais et obscurité au sens figuré. Victor Svoboda in the Gazette said, breu, a word Brazilians commonly use when talking about the pitch dark. In the New York Times, Rosalind Sulkis says, breu implies a murky or dim light. And then in some place called Global Rhythm, and some person named Ernest Barteldis says breu means a deep darkness. And then Michael Upchurch in the Seattle Times, quote, yeah, did repeat what Philip Spohr said, Portuguese for pitch as in pitch black.
What does Grupo Corpo say it means?
I got this big fat package and they don't.
You see, that's why everybody's guessing.
I think they.
But we got the gist of it, you know. Yes. Everyone's on the same page. No one's saying it means yellow or sunshine. I think we're okay.
Tar?
But yeah, so Grupo Corpo is a company from Brazil, and you can, if you didn't know that going in, you know it by the time you leave, because it's definitely Brazilian based, Brazilian inspired. The music starts off, you know, with a Brazilian mm-hmm. kind of almost like traditional Brazilian.
Well, yeah. Well, Tom Zay, who did this music, is phenomenal. And it's the sort of thing where, yeah, you keep going and then I'll do my stuff.
Well, no, back and forth works for me. But yeah, I mean, the first piece, Parabello, is pretty much about, well, okay, one theory on interpreting that piece is taking a Brazilian dance, Brazilian music from its roots and kind of bringing it a little bit more forward into time. Did you get that at all?
I got it as pretty much generic Brazilian music.
Oh, yeah?
Generic Brazilian dancing, sort of hip swing and stuff like that. They were wearing the unitards to show off their fabulous Brazilian bodies. And at which point, okay, once you got over that, okay, fine, whatever.
That's a big thing for Grupo Corpo, is like outrageous colors and unitards. Like, absolutely every show I've seen has got to have
except
the unitards.
To me, it didn't go beyond that. It's the sort of thing where, fine, they do know how to move. Mm-hmm. They weren't doing anything that, if I go down Copacabana and look on the beach, I'm going to see the same stuff down there. You go to mm-hmm. Carnival and you see even more outrageous stuff. I don't think that they were pushing anything anywhere, anyhow.
I agree with you, but I want to separate Parabello from breu, because I would totally say yes, yes, yes for Parabello. It was just kind of like dancing and almost to this chaotic mm-hmm. point where you're like, I don't really know what I'm looking at.
I like breu even less.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, then we're going to have a fight. Let's talk about breu.
Well, hold on a second. Let me put on the music for breu. We got an excerpt here. Nobody can see Allison moving her shoulders around.
Oh, that's one thing I'll say for both of them, is that I wanted to move, you know? You see these people, like, jumping around and just giving so much energy.
On breu, they were just, like, writhing around on the floor.
Okay.
It's also the music. I want to move.
There you go. Exactly. Breu, they described it as a poem. And I thought that was so beautiful. It's a really different style than I've seen Grupo Corpo do before. They're usually like fun and athletic. And this one was, you know, as those, I don't know, 10 definitions you gave us, it was darker, you know.
Much darker.
Yeah. And they had their unitards on, but it was black and white.
You know that if you go to Ogilvy's and you look in the window, they have the complete costume. They have something that very closely approaches the costumes from breu.
Well, I know where I'm going after the show. Who doesn't need a unitard that looks like that?
But no, this is actually all black and white dresses. It's not unitards, but it's designed to look exactly like they got either Grupo Corpo ripped off the designers or the other way around. Although there was a sort of thing where, that black stuff on the back, which is the pitch and the tar and the darkness and so on, all it really does is make their butts shine. And I'm like, enough with the good butts. It's okay, you guys move for a living. I hope that you would have good butts. But I just, just annoyed me.
Maybe you're spoiled. I don't know. I like looking at those.
Which one? I didn't get to see the Jiri Killian.
There you go. But yeah, they're set too for that second part.
It was like a locker room.
But it was, again, like Théâtre Maisonneuve, like huge space. And it's all these like, it looked like a large rectangular disco ball that's black.
Ooh.
Does no, that make any
no,
sense?
It struck me as just being like a locker room with shiny black tiles.
But everywhere. Yeah. On the wings, on the back.
Mm-hmm, wow. Exactly.
But it was clean, you know? It was contained and it created an atmosphere.
Yeah, but then that's where it got me, is it still was, again, about the moving. And then, yes, in Brave, there was that one duet where she flopped around on his thighs and stuff like that. That was pretty damn, I will agree, that
was
5-minute bit was pretty damn spectacular.
Yeah, this was near the end, hey, when they were trying to help each other out crawling off stage.
Yeah.
They.
No, that's right. There were two duets. There's one in Parabella where she's flopping around on his thighs.
No, that's different.
And each one had one specific moment.
I would agree that the duets were kind of the stronger parts, especially when they were given attention. Because again, like a lot of stuff is happening at stage at once.
Yeah.
And that's hard to deal with. But when they kind of concentrate on these moments and you really get to enjoy the work, it's really nice.
Yeah, but that's the whole sort of thing, is that everybody's moving. You recognize, okay, they're at a certain level of quality. And it's the sort of thing of saying, okay, fine. You know how to write, you can know where the commas go, you know how to make everything into paragraphs, but there's really no compelling story behind it. And while I recognize that there's not necessarily a need to have a narrative or a compelling story behind dancing per se, it's the sort of thing where the movement itself was nothing more than sort of like just a generic sort of Brazilian type of stuff.
Again, Parabello, yes, exactly right. But Breo, no, because it had a mood, it had an atmosphere, it had this darkness. You felt the darkness. It was almost aggressive.
I just saw them flopping around, writhing around on stage and not even doing that terribly gracefully. It was that sort of like, okay, they sort of, had sort of like night tremors or something like that. And their feet would go flying in the air. Oops. Oh my God. That's so exciting. You got to be kidding.
But it had a package, you know. It had what's that word that I love?
So do Fruit Loops and Count Chocula.
Okay, I want to share a little bit more of the vision too, because they have these unitards on, and there's more color or more whiteness in the front, and the back's all black. So they did these nice, fun things with the images of the people on stage. You know, you flip black, flip white, and we had vocabulary that was a little bit more consistent in the second piece than in the first piece. You know, you had those that little leg flop thing coming back several times. Right. I don't think the vocabulary was as developed or as strong as, say, Jerry Killian, but it had consistency to it, which I appreciate.
Yeah, but it's porridge has consistency as well.
Oh goodness! Ooh. What's with breakfast food and Grupo Corpo?
Maybe I woke up late. I don't know. I'm sorry.
But there was this other moment that I really enjoyed at the close to the very beginning of Breo, where they're in a clump in the back corner, and you have someone on the ground in the front. And also, in both works, the dancers and the music is very strongly linked. And so as the music takes a beat, the dancers take a step, and the person on the floor flips over. And so you, without touching him, you get this impression of all these people kind of being aggressive towards this one person. And it continues and it continues. And I thought it was really, like, that's what I'm talking about. That was consistent with the mood, with the theme of the piece, which it seems like was very inspired with kind of rough neighborhoods in Brazil. And
have you ever been to Monday Nights at the Wheel Club?
No.
Okay, at which point, try line dancing with everybody at the Wheel Club. They've been line dancing for 30 years. Somebody new comes in, at which point, you get the evil eye, too. It is not the sort of thing. Yes, I recognize that it had a thing. I just didn't think it held it real well. It was, yes, it's a idea, it's a concept, but it, to me, it was just so generic, so there. It's like nothing sort of like, oh my God, it's, yes, and you're right, I am spoiled. I am used to seeing, oh my God.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. I mean, I will admit, I wasn't blown away, for sure. And it was definitely all about the love of dance. Like, you go there and you see these athletes running around.
If that's how much they love dance, then I'd be very, very worried about dance being able to survive. That's not an awful lot of love.
Well, I would say choreographically, but I mean the performers have talent. The performers have energy, and they have legs that, for days. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. The height on those kicks was incredible. So
it's the dancers are spectacular. Mm-hmm. They do their moves really, really well, but that doesn't take away from the fact that it's just
the packaging was
just generic sort of this is Brazil now, mm-hmm, with an exclamation point on it and a nice picture on a beach on the record record cover. Okay. You want to try the whatchamacallit, the La Zampa edgy woman thing?
Sure. Okay. So, not to be confused with their other show that's coming up, what I saw was a solo by...
Oh, and hold on a second. Bettina, do you have any questions?
Oh,
No. I'm good. I think you exhausted the Brazilian dance thing. All clued in.
Cool. Doom. Yes, sorry. Magali Million? Is that right?
Yeah, I had difficulty with it when they were in studio.
And they were in, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We were talking to them. So she did a solo in this piece, and it was an Edgy Woman Festival thing. And there were three works. There was Primordial Vaudeville, which was a circus show, which was awesome. I'll get to that in a second. And what was the other one? Doom. There was a performance art piece called a well-known performance, and then Dream On Track 1 by La Zampa. So, La Zampa. Raw rock, pretty hardcore. Let me start with the opening image, which was phenomenal and really exciting, and then things kind of went where they went from there. But she comes out on stage, very dimly lit, the back corner. And she stands there, and you can kind of tell that she's holding a bottle, but you're not really sure. And it looks like a wine bottle with no label, green glass. And she stands there, and there's stillness and silence. And then she just flip, lights go on, she smashes the bottle on the ground, soundtrack starts. And it just shatters instantly. It must have been like candy glass or something like that. And all these little bits and pieces kind of spill towards the audience, and it creates this beautiful, like, constellation effect, and it hit my toes, you know. It came all the way to the front from the back of this, you know, tangent, big space. And then she's still again, and there's this moment of tension. You're like, where do we go from here? And there's this hardcore rock music playing, and it's just like repeating. What I remember from it is Lick My Legs, and it's just getting louder and louder and more intense, and you're like, where is she going to go from here? And then she slowly lowers herself to the ground and starts to roll on the glass. But again, I'm like, what is that made out of? Because she looked fine, like there was no blood in the end of the performance. But anyway, and then from there, she starts to dance around, and it's very much like, it seems like, without like stripping off how you should be dancing on this kind of like rock music, and putting on like what her body feels like doing, and then going from there. So there's a lot of like shaking and a lot of repetition, and it seems, or like hip wiggling and stuff like that. And it seemed a lot like she was trying to reach this trance like imagery, because things would repeat and repeat and repeat, and she'd move on, you know, and a new track would start and stuff like that. And something else that she reminded me of was Sistema, which my roommate introduced me to. It's a martial art, and the whole theory behind it is that you're totally relaxed, and there's no muscle tension, and you hit with like a lot of power, but no tension. And I felt like that's how she was moving, you know. It was really loose, really floppy kind of thing, but like, you know, she'd jump and she'd hit the ground and make a huge sound, you know, like it was very strong but very loose. So it was all about like muscles and flesh, and less so about bones and kind of structure. So
how did the music figure into this? Because apparently there's a strong relationship.
Yeah, exactly.
This is sort of an ensemble piece. I remember when they were here, they talked about how even the lighting and the set and everything sort of plays a part.
I think it was all based on the music. Like, the music came first, and then the piece was created on top of it as her interpretation to that, mm-hmm, music. Which is why, you know, where I come to my theory of it must have been kind of like, this is what her body wants to do when she hears this kind of music, you know, without thinking like, oh, this is how you dance to this type of music, you know. Like, it was very raw, kind of body moving in space to the sound.
Did it feel choreographed, or was it then totally spontaneous?
No, it was definitely choreographed. You could tell by the lighting, because again, you know, directing the eye around the stage, she would have a moment. This is factors into the trance-like thing too, where she would stand in a spot and shake. Oh, this is probably important too, just for number three on our list for topless pieces tonight. she shook until she had kind of like a wife beater top and underwear on, and then she shook until the sleeves fell off, and so she was kind of just wearing it around her waist for the rest of the piece. But yeah, so she would do this under, you know, a spot and kind of do it for a long time and kind of develop it a little bit more, and like head banging like crazy, like just loose neck flying around. I was like, oh my God, you know? It seemed a little bit masochistic almost, really, with the lying on the glass and this kind of like shaking, throwing body kind of stuff.
Very interesting. I can imagine now.
You can visualize. Yes. Yeah. Mm. So that is La Zampa. Any more questions on that?
No.
No?
Sounds edgy.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was pretty edgy. We have time. Can I just, I just want to mention Primordial Vaudeville, because I know I didn't go to the show necessarily to review it, but it was just awesome. Where's my info about it? It was Kryn Maren Haglund. That sounds right. Okay. And they are from, I want to say France. I believe that's right. And it was a three-woman clown show, or circus show, let's say. They were clowning the whole time, and they had a little bag of tricks. They had Ariel to start it off with, and the whole theme was like from evolution to little girls to growing up to getting married to a vaudeville ending, which was cool. And they were great performers, and everything was casual but spot on, you know, like they were kind of, you know, little girls bumping into each other and whatnot, great faces, really animated, and then, you know, but at the same time, you know, hit their marks, did the flag tricks perfect. There was like a little contortion where she drank from a wine glass using her toe.
Mm-hmm.
It was
a trick.
Fantastic. Yeah, it was cute. There was hat juggling. There was, you know, those giant hoops. I'm sorry, I don't know what it's called. And you hold on to it.
Giant hoops,
yeah. And just spin around. Anyway, it was super, super well done. So a little shout out for those girls, because that was amazing.
Once again, I miss out. Cool. And was it the two of them that night, or was there a third piece as well?
And then there was a performance art piece.
Okay.
Do you want to hear about that?
Yeah, sure.
If you have things to say about it.
I actually got to get up on stage for that one.
Ooh.
That's the thing at the Tangente. Also, a word of warning from one of my pieces, the Demolition Boy. It was the other one. If you sit in the front row, you're likely to be part of the evening at one point.
It was called Well-Known Performance by Shannon. I'm handing over the sheet. I'm just tired of mispronouncing names today.
Shannon Cochran.
Cochran. Oh, no.
As in Tom Cochran.
Perfect. All right. So her piece was all about Viagra. And I've dabbled in performance art a little bit. So as far as I can tell, she was, you know, spot on in her medium. You know, nothing was kind of faked, or like everything was planned, but nothing was dishonest. I felt like it was true performance art. You know, she was there. She was, you know, it was lights up kind of thing, help me set up this table, okay, we're good to go, I'm going to start my performance now, hey everybody, I'm going to do a performance. So that was good. It was nice that it was everything was taken care of too, you know. The risk of having it be so open and raw and honest is that, you know, it kind of comes together last minute, but it was obviously something that she's worked on, and it was really well done. I don't think I came away with it from it any different or any more knowledgeable. She took some Viagra at the get-go and then talked to us for a bit. She did the whole eat a banana and then, you know, spit milk across the stage. Like, we're like, okay,
mm-hmm.
I get it. We had sparklers, and then she asked a series of questions and weeded out people with, you know, heart problems, with you were pregnant. I'm like, wait, where are we going with this? So lucky me, we got to join her for cake covered in Viagra at the end of the performance, and she even read out, you know, how the space was not responsible for what was going on, blah blah blah. She was taking responsibility. Were we willing to take responsibility for ourselves, etc.? So, well done. I mean, performance arts, performance art. Mm. I can say that.
Yep.
Everybody understands. Yes. So that was that. Okay. That was the end of the night. So yeah, I think my edgy woman festival experience was a little bit more edgy than yours was, Bettina.
Yeah, I may have been there on a tame night.
And so how was the mega auction versus the giant dance party?
Oh, it went super well. We had a fundraiser last night for my fringe show coming out called The Duck Wife. And it was a mega auction and a giant dance party. So we did, like, you know, 15 minutes auction, 15 minutes dance party, 15 minutes auction, 15 minutes dance party. And it was just great. I was blown away by Montreal's generosity, and we had such a good time all around.
Okay, who won what?
Who won what?
Yes.
Well, it's an auction. Do you win an auction, uh-huh, yes, or do you purchase?
If you're the high bidder, you win.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Who won what?
Well, what were the prizes?
Let's talk about the this is funny, because the things that we thought were going to sell the most sold pretty well, but the thing that sold, I think, the most was this, not the most, but the most money for what it was worth kind of thing, was this jar that Mike Hughes made of, it was like a creative jar. You had different colored pieces of paper, and one of them was who you are, one of them was what you're doing, and one of them was where you are. And so it would be something like, you're a clown at a bus stop looking for your sister. Stuff like that. So it was like a silly little gift. And those were the things that people got the most excited about. And those were, I think that went for $25 for a jar and some paper. It was wonderful. But we also had some more serious pieces of artwork. And we had a haircut by Dave Landry. That there was bidding war for that one. You know, you got people giving each other icy eyes from across the room. we had some jewelry for sale. And we had performances, too. We had the Ladies Auxiliary Go-Go Squad. Wow. And if you were tuned in for Venus just before us, Anna from that show was part of that Go-Go Squad. And they do a little parody on, or a dance piece to one of the early Metro commercials from the 60s. So it was just super cute. It's like a minute and a half. We were talking about it. We're like, oh, how do we make that longer? Because it was so much fun. And then we did, Mo Clark did a piece, one of her first comical spoken word pieces ever. It was great. And at the end of the night, it was a joint fundraiser, I have to mention that. The Carney Collective, producing Terwilliger, happening at the end of this month, and Inertia Productions with The Duck Wife. So what we did is we had a dance-off between the two companies at the end of the night, and it was hip-hop style to this song called, I think it was Boom Dynamite, and it was just awesome. So that really got the party started.
So you guys are going to be able to make it across country now for all the fringes?
Getting closer, let's say that, yeah.
As long as you don't have to put stamps on the postcard saying where you've been.
What do you mean by that?
Stamps cost money.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Just put the postcards in the mail.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you can explain a little bit about what exactly is The Duck Wife and where you're planning on going to.
Sure, yeah. We're doing a bit more of a tour this year than we've done before. It's a contemporary dance theater rock show. So we're calling it a rock opera. We have Grub Animal, this awesome band from Brooklyn, New York, and they've done this album called The Duck Wife, and it's based on an Inuit fairy tale about the duck wife. But I'm not going to give away too much of the story, because that's the whole point of the show, is that we're going to tell you this story with the live band performing select pieces from the album, and then the dancers, performers, because we have dancers and actors, going through the tale with us. And we're going to do the Montreal Fringe, the Ottawa Fringe, Toronto Fringe, and Edmonton Fringe this summer.
Well, tour.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. I look forward to reviewing it as well as seeing it, although two separate things entirely.
Yeah.
At which point, we're at the top of the hour. Primetime's going to show up soon and do positive vibes. Yeah, we briefly, what are you looking forward to next week?
Well, actually, we were going to talk about one thing, and I just wanted to do a shout-out of something I saw at FTA.
Okay.
Can I do that?
Yes, uh-huh.
There is this one thing called Tu vois ce que je veux dire, where during the FTA, people are being sort of blindfolded and walked around the neighborhood. These guys still are looking for volunteers. If you want to learn how to sort of move blindfolded people from A to B and be part of this art adventure, you should email tuvois@fta.qc.ca. That's my shout out.
Okay. And yeah, there it's, Movement Museum. Thank you very much for everybody listening. Thank you, Alice and Elizabeth. Thank you, Bettina. My name is Zeke. Thank you, Primetime, for letting us go over time. And we will see you next week. Same dance channel, same dance time. 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial. Movement-museum.blogspot.com. Everywhere else.